changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more.
I want to share with you something that really struck me the other day and has left such a profound impact on me that it is augmenting my behavior. So that's a big thing when something like that happens. I met my daughter in Chicago for a few days when I was doing a speech, and we had a wonderful time. We stayed in Chinatown. We ate lots of great vegan food, and we decided to spend a lot of time in the art museum. So we went to the Carnegie Institute of Art, and I don't know much about art, never studied art, don't really, and I, as I've said before, my family eschewed anything that was cultural. It just was not our thing. And so I really don't know much about it, but what I've noticed is as I walk around a museum, and that includes what's the one in Kansas City? Somebody help me. The Nelson, or a museum in New York City or whatever, that there are certain artists that just sort of draw me in, and that I can stand there and look at and imagine their work. And one of them is Vincent van Gogh. His name is actually Van Gogh. I don't know exactly where or when we began to pronounce it Go, but I've actually seen several of his originals. I was in Pittsburgh and went to the art museum there, and I noticed that I get this feeling from his work, and I don't know anything about it. So I am about half of the way through a biography of him, which is really quite fascinating. I'll call him Van Gogh because that's what we call him, you know. Van Gogh was actually raised in an art dealing situation. His older brother was an art dealer, and Van Gogh became an art dealer himself as a teenager. It was his job. He actually worked and would look and find works and put them in galleries and sell them and things like that. And never ever had any inclination that he himself would become an artist of any kind. Something I found interesting at the Van Gogh exhibit I went to see recently is that, and I just sort of moved cursorily over it, but if not, I'm not mistaken, the eight of the top eight highest selling paintings of all time are all Van Gogh's. And I think the first one started at $78 million, and then it went down to like $56 million from there. He died, of course, broke. And of course, he also lived a very, very sad life. But that's not really what I want to talk about. I don't really want to try and convince you that he's a great artist. Something I discovered at this Van Gogh exhibit, and there's a bunch of them. They're in like every major city right now. From what I understand, there are four different companies that all of a sudden are doing this. One of the things that they did that was really, really interesting was there was an optional virtual experience, VR, virtual reality. And I've never done virtual reality. So how cool was it that I got to do this for the very first time? And you put on the goggles and you're actually sitting in a little swivel chair in a room and, you know, along this line, and everybody's doing the same thing. And of course, you can't see anything because you're in this reality. And it starts in Van Gogh's bedroom, the one that he painted and became so famous. And they showed you what the bedroom probably looks like. And then they show you how he painted it and the differences. And then they take you for a walk down. You walk through the little town that Van Gogh lived in, and you can look off to the sides. And at times there are these arrows that lean you off, and you can see there's the haystacks that he painted so famously. And then over there, there's the handy, the worker, the peasant worker and his wife relaxing, napping in the sun in the afternoon next to a haystack. And what it does then is actually superimposes a frame and shows you how Van Gogh painted it and how he saw it. Of course, I'm looking forward to Starry Night. I'm looking forward to, because that's, I think, would say probably his most famous portrait, painting rather. And as we're moving down, you're going down these cobblestone streets and everything and turning and everything, and then you see it. And you're looking at the sky, and the sky looks like the sky. I mean, you can see boats on the water and everything, and it really, really looks like it. And the moon is there and everything, and then it slowly begins to show you Starry Night, as if this is what Van Gogh actually saw, but then to bring it out. I loved it. I loved it. Now, the reason this is actually changing my behavior is I decided to get up the other morning and go to the Tiki Hut with Teddy and have a cup of coffee and watch the sun rising on the clouds in the west, which then reflect down into the water. And it's just really beautiful. The interesting thing was, having had this experience of seeing what the night sky probably looked like that night when Van Gogh painted it, and then seeing it his way, all of a sudden I began to see the bay as if I was looking through his eyes. And that's the punchline to all of this. One of the things that I discovered was the reason Van Gogh used such vivid lines and broad colors, and he was partially colorblind. He was partially colorblind. And they, at this exhibit that I went to see in Miami, they showed you what some of his own pictures would have looked like to him with that particular type of colorblindness. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Without that limitation, would he have become the great master that he was? He only painted for 8 years, by the way, or drew and painted for 8 years. Died at 37, if I'm not mistaken, by his own hand. Tortured soul. But I wonder if his eyesight and the way he saw the world is what touched the world so much. Makes me think of my friend Dan Murphy, a radio announcer in Seattle, Washington, who was born with cataracts in both eyes. One was so bad they removed it. I hope I'm telling Dan's story right. I feel pretty sure I am. They removed one of his eyes, and so he wore an artificial eye, wears an artificial eye. And then the other one, he can still see like 5, 10, 15% of what, you know, we see. And so that's about a, 5% ability to see. And when he was a boy, they wanted to put him into a sheltered workshop to do piecemeal work, stuffing envelopes and things like that. But Dan's parents wouldn't have it. His mother took him to school every day, sat next to him, wrote down all the notes from what the teacher was saying. And this was throughout school. And then she would go home and teach it all again to Dan. And Dan actually got good grades. And then he went to broadcasting school and he became a radio announcer. Very successful one for over 40 years. Sometimes what we have, which are disabilities, are our abilities. Every superhero must experience a super breakdown, a super tragedy, a super issue. And it's that that releases us so that we can then become what it is we are meant or want or desire to express in the world. I've talked to a lot of people who do what I do, who have written books on personal development and who are professional speakers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I wouldn't say in any way that it's universal, but I would say that there are some tortured souls out there who are seeking to heal themselves. And in the process, they invite others along with them. And that's how they're able to improve the world. You know where I'm leading here. You know where I'm going. I'm not asking you to post it. I will share that my childhood of entitlement combined with criticism and abuse is the reason that I do what I do today. So that would be what I would call my disability. But to tell myself that I can't do and become what I want to be because of it is a lie. That's why I so cleverly call this lie abilities. You've got a liability. You've got something that you know to be true in your mind about you, and it may actually very well be true. The challenge, or the opportunity, I should say, the opportunity is to become even more because of it. I remember when there was a missing paragraph, when my first book, A Complaint-Free World, went to publish, the editor came back with a note and said, right here, it's like, there's something missing. What is it? And I read and then went to the next paragraph and I was like, you know what? He's right. He's right. What is it? And I came up with the analogy of the further you pull back a slingshot, the farther it flies. And that is so true. Don't let your lie ability become a disability. Let it become something that you serve the world with. It's the best thing you can do.
No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. Flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more.